Good day, everyone, and welcome to Indie Mixtape. My name is Ty, and joining me today is HB. How's it going, HB?
It's going great.
Hell yeah, love to hear it. So we're gonna just go ahead and jump right in. Today we are playing, or I guess we played, a game called Grotto as our mutual game this time, and that is Grotto. A game Grotto, baby, and that is Grotto, a game, baby, by Brainwash Gang, and it was published by Digirati. And so they describe it as a mystical narrative focused experience, which I can't think of really a better way to describe it. You are playing as a soothsayer slash like astrologist who lives in this cave around other anthropomorphic animal people who are kind of in like different tribal societies. And they come to you and ask you to read the stars. So you go on your little star platform and look up in a crack in your cave and look up at the stars, and you build out constellations yourself, and then based on the shapes that you make, you get different constellations that have like different interpretations. And then the kind of tricky thing with it is, even if you're trying to tell someone one thing with an interpretation, they might not interpret it the same way you do. And so you get this whole kind of like unraveling socio-political storyline about these like different communities and how they've interpreted your advice, and it's really, really cool.
Yeah. To add a little context, basically how the divination works in this game is that you look up constellations in the sky, and they basically kind of populate on your wall, so you could have, like, you know, like a crab in there, or like a, what's another one? Like the ivy, or like a slumbering volcano, an active volcano, that kind of thing. And basically how that works is that whenever somebody asks you a question, you pick up one of the constellations and bring it back to them. And basically, this is... So it's a divination game in the same vein as like Astrologaster, where you can... Where the idea is that the divinations you're doing are basically arbitrary. You're just kind of making a judgment call. And while you eventually get some tools to help you with that, the ultimate thing is people ask you for advice and you go up, look at the sky, and go like, yeah, this seems sensible. And then take them whatever seems like the best advice to give them.
Yeah, and a lot of it is kind of like vibes-based.
A lot of it is vibes-based, but just because it's vibes-based doesn't mean there aren't consequences. Oh boy, there are some consequences going through this game.
There are some consequences with a capital C.
Yeah, I have written down in my notes that there are consequences. Things are not going to go super well in this game. And the game is very upfront about that, to its credit. It's like, listen, buddy, this is a story about how you fucked up and how everyone fucked up.
Yeah, it very much... It's a story about failure. I really like the narration. Yeah, I really like the narration. I took a bunch of screenshots of the different, like, this is a story about lines. But yeah, it does explicitly say, this is a story about failure. Like, you are going to watch everything fall apart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But beyond that, despite the fact that it's very upfront about this, it's still very effective at getting you to be like, oh, but these people, I gotta help these guys. Maybe it'll work out. It won't work out, but maybe, you know, maybe in your heart of hearts you think it might work out.
Yeah. Because like, I will say the game is great about making you think that it might work out. It extremely won't, but...
Yeah! You're so screwed, I love it. It's like, because like, to add a little context for the people you're divining for, they are tribal societies, but they are specifically the people you'll have the most interface with in the game, are these guys known as, that other people call the Brutes. And they are people who don't have any kind of state, they don't really have any names, they're just named after the things they do. They don't have any kind of gender divisions. Basically, everybody in this game just uses AM pronouns. Everybody's just kind of gender neutral, including you. You're also a weird little guy. The Brutes think you're ugly, but, you know, that's just their opinion. They aren't allowed to take partners. They ritually determine the fates of their children. And if they find out that, for example, children aren't good for anything, they just kind of ritually kill them. And they're also only allowed to have procreative sex for one day every year, and similar interesting traditions. And part of the problem is that people in that community have a lot of different opinions about what those traditions are and which of them they should keep, especially after their chief dies and some trouble begins. So yeah, a lot of the divinations that you do involve taking sides. You kind of advise the locals, you tell them what to do, some of the time you're going to give them, let's face it, you're going to give them bad advice sometimes, and they're just going to suffer or die or something like that will happen. That's just how divination is.
Yeah. I also like, as you progress, you get different little divination tools, and the way that they turn out, narratively, is really interesting, and I, low-key screamed a little bit at the, reveal of what one of them was doing.
Yes. not all tools are made equal. There's some beautiful stuff with the tools in particular.
Yeah, one of them is pulling some shit.
Yeah. It's especially because, the advice that it gives you is also, in retrospect, you go oh, that's what they meant.
Yeah. I'll say, too, the art in this game fucking whips. All the character designs are so cool. And the, you get on the wall, paintings of the constellations that you've made. And they just look really cool and pretty.
Yeah. I think the very cool animal art also makes the game feel a lot brighter than it would if the art were, a little less, a little less whimsical than it is, because there's a sort of, all these agender animal people with weird eyes and bad personalities, and this sort of weird dank little cave where you're meeting all of them, and the kind of really nice art for the constellations, all of it comes together to make it feel like a lot more enjoyable, I think. The aesthetics really do add a lot here. Also,
yeah, I agree.
This game is very funny a lot of the time.
It is. There's especially, the first character that you meet, I think is so funny.
He's so funny. Or A's so funny. A just arrive and go it kind of set off the entire events of the game, and that's, I think that's just beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
They're the only people who know who you really are for the most part.
Yeah, and they're kind of, or A, because they, the, all of the people in this use different pronouns. It's A, Ayers. M.
Yeah, A-M. A-M airs.
This first character that you meet is, the only one that kind of understands not only what your deal is, but kind of also what the deal is with how other people will digest and interpret your constellation readings as. And, yeah, they're a fucking goober.
Yes. I mean, they're all goobers is the best part. They're all just kind of a lot of the people that you talk to have are very convincingly written as selfish, self-involved, or concerned with things that's whatever advice you give them, they will act in their own sort of selfish way. It just determines what exact kind of spin they're gonna put on it.
Yeah,
it's beautiful. There's also, so we were also talking about how sometimes a voice talks to you, and it's sort of like the framing device of the game, that your fire sometimes turns purple and talks to you as the entire plot of the game develops. And it's a nice touch, especially where that winds up. I kind of really like that framing device.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that as well, and also where it ends up and the decision that you get to make with that.
Because you do get to make a decision. That's a big one.
Yes, you do.
Yeah. I think what I also really liked in this game is that it has a sort of insightful approach, I think, with the symbolism of the stars, especially with how it changes over time. Where you start with your set of constellations, but as the game itself develops, they are going to, basically, the symbolic system of the stars is subordinate to whoever is asking you about them. where a lot of it is also knowing, so what do they think this means?
Yeah, it's really cool how the game, like, mechanically shows the way that, like, different cultures will, and, like, different religious beliefs will change things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It all comes together into really kind of a, if you'll pardon the pun, kind of a magical experience. good times. Yeah. Do you have more to say about Grano?
No, I think I'm good on it. It's a good little game.
Yeah. It's very good. I was surprised at how engaging it turned out to be. Because I've played similar games before, and it's a very particular kind of tone that it strikes.
Yeah, no, as I started, I was like, HB is gonna fucking lose it.
Yeah! Listen, you start this game out by meeting a fucked up little guy.
Yeah.
That's about at this HB point, I have such
a, like, I feel like I have, like, such a pulse for what is, like, an HB-coded game, and, like, the second I saw this, I was like, this is, like, a heat-seeking fucking missile.
Yeah. So many little guys.
But on that note, HB, what's your first game this time?
Well, this time, I'm covering a little game known as Who's Lila? Which is a 2022 adventure game by Garage Heathen. Now, what this game is about is maybe a little difficult to explain, so we'll start in the, you know, we'll start in the usual place of who your protagonist is. You take on the role of William, who is a high school student in Detroit, which I kind of find very funny, and this guy has, like, a very serious problem. As the game frames it, he can't really make convincing facial expressions on his own. And so, the main mechanic of the game is that whenever he talks to somebody, you need to sculpt his face into believable expressions. And this is, like, in conversations that he has, you know, with his school friends, like, his enemies, and his, what will turn out to be a whole cavalcade of strange rivals. And so, you may wonder what the tone of this game is. Well, what happens next is that you go to school and you find out there's a significant complication here, which is that William is the last person who saw a woman named Tanya Kennedy, who is like a missing girl from his class that everybody is just really worried about. Kind of a Laura Palmer vibe, popular girl just suddenly disappeared. And, of course, the second complication that follows from that is that you fairly quickly come to terms that William is a total freak who probably did actually murder Tanya. So, you making very convincing facial expressions is even more important than that. And then, of course, there's the third complication, which is that you're actually not William at all. You're actually somebody else. You are somebody named Lila, per the name of the game, who is a... What exactly Lila is something that a lot of the game is dedicated to exploring, but you're sort of a wandering consciousness that's settled in his body. And you kind of displaced the original William, and that's where some of the mystery of this game originates, but there's a lot more to it. Because all of this is something you'll discover fairly early on in the game. You're just going to walk into, like, a janitor's closet, and the guy's going to turn to you and go, like, ah, Lila, how are you doing? And you're playing, the entirety of this game is just a single day in Lila's strange life. Which is the day immediately following the disappearance of Tanya. So you immediately become fairly acquainted with the stakes, like what you're supposed to do, that kind of thing. And because it's a single day in length, and like a single playthrough takes like 30 minutes to an hour, it has it instead plays on like having a major arcana deck's worth of endings. Some of those endings are like subtle variations where you can make like one decision or another in part of like an ending path. And some of those endings are like very, very varied. And the trick is that in each one of them, you'll find out a little more about what's going on. You're going to find out more about William, like who he was, who Lila is, how William and Lila relate, who are the rest of the cast of this game, and what the hell is actually going on. You'll also, you know, get to do some murders, you'll get to engage with some very strange stuff, and you'll of course get to make a lot of really funny expressions. And all of this adds up to what I would describe as Lynchian vibes, which is a term that gets often used in, like, the vaguest of terms. Like, it feels kind of fucked up, and people think, you know, this feels like Lynch. This game really does feel Lynchian, though, and it's not, And it's not just a vague thing. It's that the vibes are decidedly remarkably close to Twin Peaks: The Return. And one of the reasons that is because it's also it's because the strange thing about this game is that it's Detroit, Michigan, being interpreted by Russian developers, which has a kind of interestingly alien element to like the entire thing, where it's an American town in a specific city, but also written in such a way that like at a strange remove, you know. And further yeah. adding the Lynchian vibes, is that this is a game where people have got honest to god demons in them. There's just fucked up shit around every corner you just kind of run into, and nobody seems especially concerned about. And on top of that, the aesthetics of this game are quite interesting. Where the devs got all the faces that you're working with in this one have been obtained from like an AI-generated library, to my understanding. Everybody just looks kind of generically handsome and unremarkable. And like very... Like in that way that AI arts, in that way that like AI generated faces just look like nobody in particular. And all as a result, all the characters of this game just look like really enigmatic. On top of that, the whole thing is styled like a sort of 90s computer game, you know, with that sort of like monochrome, with that sort of monochrome color thing. Where it's just kind of pixelated to like fill in colors and do stuff like that. And on top of that, there's also just some really grody compressed voices. And even, you might be pleased to know, some ARG elements. Where this game Ooh. Loves to play around with giving you, like, utility programs, external websites, scouring Twitter feeds, which is very funny considering this game came out in 2022, and now Twitter is doing some stuff. And, like, early in 2022. Because some of these things are just like, oh, you see a code, for example, in like the Steam header, and you can use that for something. That's the very funny thing about it. It's just clues everywhere. And as I kind of got to a little earlier, maybe the best part of this is that you're kind of really at the center of this mystery in a way that you often don't see in mystery games, where you are kind of the villain of the story. Because this game really loves lying to you in lots of very funny ways. As like Jacob Geller talked about this game, and for example, what he noted was you do make facial expressions on your own, and it's often at the worst possible time. Like somebody's going to remind you about the murder that you did, and you're just gonna start smiling a real goofy smile all of a sudden. The problem is not so much that Lila can't make these expressions, it's just that she's not actually upset about anybody being murdered or hurt. And as you continue to explore this game, kind of the default path that you begin on is you go to school, but as you find out more about the game, you can, for example, input addresses into the search bar on your map and unlock new locations. You can kind of do all sorts of alternate runs, add more information, do that kind of thing. And you get to consort with cultists, you get to traffic with demons, fool around with strange objects, fool around with your system settings to unlock new stuff. You can do you can conspire with the janitor, you can engage in mortal conflict, get your face melted by seeing something you shouldn't have. Lots of good stuff. And of course, you also get to look back on William's life as a strange teenager, even before all of this happened to him. There's a sort of really grungy, mysterious, and grody vibe to all of it, and it's a mystery that really does it for me for that reason. You can just kind of keep fooling around with it and keep finding out more. So it's a really fun game to play with a friend and just kind of theory craft about as you keep going through it. Yeah, it's a sort of game that I would recommend playing with somebody next to you, because it's just really funny to react to all the strange shit it throws your way. But yeah, that's Who's Lila in a short and slightly chaotic rendition. Such a good game.
Yeah, it sounds pretty nifty.
Yeah. It's really like a game that I played and felt like a new thing, like something I'd never seen before. So yeah, what's your next game, Ty?
My next game is Mudborne. And it is by T Engineers, and it's a little nature sim game where you have been visited in your dreams by a mysterious frog god, and she chooses you to help her rediscover her lost children. And so you become a little frog, and you can also catch little frogs and chase them, and you collect them, and you breed them and have them hang out. It's the same people who made Apico, I'm not sure how to say it. I think Apico, which is like the little beekeeping game. And it is kind of like that, but with frogs. But it's a little bit more like mystical, I would say. Since you're like working for a frog god and stuff. But it's very cute. And it's basically just like a demo at this point. But the dev on the itch page has said that like if people are interested in it, they might like make it into a bigger thing. So yeah, it's just really cute. It's just like pixel art and just frogs, which I love frogs. So
Frogs are, you know, one of God's favorite creatures for a reason.
It's true.
Frogs are just great.
They're so cute.
Yeah. They also don't got any teeth. They could, like, you know, you can put your hand in the frog's mouth. They can't really do anything.
Yeah. They're just goofy little goobers, and I love them, and this game really embraces that.
Yeah.
So I hope they make a bigger version of it at some point, because it's really cute.
I love a good frog, you know?
I fucking love frogs, dude. What's your next game, HB?
Well, Ty, have you ever heard of a thing called Warhammer 40K?
I have, and I was interested when you told me that this was what you were subbing in. I was like, huh, okay.
Uh-huh.
Interesting.
Yeah. Well, I play Warhammer 40K Rogue Trader, which feels like it's stretching the idea of an indie game, but I guess it's technically an indie game. Owlcat Games published this themselves.
I mean, fair enough.
Yeah. It's based on the tabletop RPG rule set from Cubicle 7, formerly Fantasy Flight Games, and it's based on the Warhammer 40K setting, and it's a big-ass game. So... Ty, are you familiar with what the Rogue Trader is in Warhammer 40K?
No.
If you had to take a wild guess, what would you think it is?
Some kind of merchant who's, like, a smuggler or doing something illegal?
Yeah. Well, that's what I would have thought as well, but no. Instead, you're playing something like a colonial viceroy is what you're playing.
Well, that just... doesn't track at all.
Yeah. They're called rogue traders because the law does not apply to them. Literally by imperial writ.
But it's like trader, right? Like trading.
Yeah, you also do that. You are... the trade that you do is basically planet-wide exploitation of several connected planets. You have your own little protectorate, and you go around, like, setting up mines, like, herding people, doing that kind of thing. Basically, you're a high-tier asshole in the Imperium of Man, which is a fascist galactic empire that answers the age-old question of, what if everything went wrong? Like, everything you could imagine. What if everything worked out in the worst possible way? Everything's just screwed in the Warhammer 40K universe, for those unfamiliar to it, and you start this game as sort of a, you know, you start out as a pretty rough customer as it is. You can, you know, be a psychic, you can be like an Imperial Guard Commissar, who, for those unfamiliar, is a guy whose job it is to shoot you if you retreat in battle. You can also be a crime lord or something like that. But if that wasn't enough, soon you become even worse, because through a series of rather unlikely events, you receive basically a writ of imperial trade, where the thing is that your job is to, as I mentioned, be basically a colonial viceroy, enforce the law of the empire, in return for being basically immune to it yourself. And you can just kind of do whatever you like so long as it produces resources. Now, because of what you are, you start the game with de jure ownership of several planets, you start with a wealth of resources, you have a spaceship that's basically a flying city that's crewed by tens of thousands of people. And being a viceroy, you'll have to administrate all of these with the help of your trusty advisors. You have to build up your colonial holdings, customize your flagship, cultivate reputation with your trading partners, and more. You're so preposterously wealthy that you don't buy things with, like, money at the store. You just have something called profit factor that just tells you, yes, we can put this on the budget. So if you want a really fancy piece of equipment, it's just a question of, like, whether you can write it off properly. And, on top of that, because you're the rogue trader, you also have to do a lot of in-person dirty work, where you go out onto planets and, shoot people in the face, order people executed, you throw your weight around with your personal retinue, you do that kind of thing. And this part gets pretty in-depth, because this is something that Rogue Trader covers extensively. You have a... It kind of reminds me of the Shadowrun Returns games in a lot of ways. Because of the way it plays around with cover, gunfire, like the balance of sort of like melee and ranged, psychic powers being into play, and that sort of thing. It's moderately crunchier than that because it's because Owlcat just make their games this way. It's a very, I can't speak to the faithfulness of the rendition, but it is very in-depth. And as you may have guessed from what I've said before, the vibe's immaculately rancid. Completely fucked. Because, first of all, you're in charge of a system of exploitation that's tantamount to human sacrifice, which claims untold human lives on a daily basis. And the game just is very upfront about this, in a sort of refreshing way. Like, for example, if there's any kind of machine in this game, it probably is actively killing someone right now. Warp travel? That kills, like, dozens of people every time you do it. Nobody knows how anything works, and everything is run in the dumbest possible way. There's a whole religious cult dedicated to maintaining your machines, and the way they do it is by appeasing machine spirits, because that's basically what computers are at this point. It's not that they're sophisticated, it's more that nobody knows how to fix them, so instead there's a lot of, like, rituals to propitiate them instead. And on top of that, because nobody knows how anything works, there's a sort of cultivated system of peasantry that you use for every kind of dangerous task, and a cultivated system of nobility that you use for every kind of skilled task, because of the way that Warhammer 40k works, no individual person can really hope to survive much of anything in this setting. And this is something that the game really trades on. You get to basically throw your subjects at most any problem to, like, predictably fatal results a lot of the time, and then you can either personally or indirectly purge your subjects if they dare to complain. And, of course, you may wonder, does this work efficient? Is this, like, an efficient system? And of course not. Everything is always going catastrophically wrong. The Imperium of Man is wildly dysfunctional. People are turning to the Chaos Gods en masse because, they don't really mind being eaten by demons if it means they get to kill their boss in the process. There's some real class war being waged here, and I appreciate the depth in which it's depicted in this game. On top of this, there's also that aliens keep coming around and messing with your guys, stealing your stars, they're just being a general nuisance. On top of that, the Imperium itself, including your fellow rogue traders who have adjacent protectorates to your own, also really love to throw roadblocks in your way because, everybody in any position of power in this game is just contractually obligated, basically, to be as much of an asshole to you as the law permits. Which is, of course, considering you're a colonial viceroy, no less than you deserve. The Imperium and its faith are also basically indistinguishable, so on top of being, like, just fascist as a system, there's also a very religious fascism on top of everything else. And, so, your question might be, so what can I do here? There are three main ethical paths you can take through Warhammer 40k Rogue Trader. The first, of course, is dogmatic, which is the party line. It involves you unthinkingly accepting and repeating the fascist dictates of the Imperium. You follow the party line, and basically, if anybody, complains or does anything you don't like or anything like that, you're just going to shoot them in the head. That's the dogmatic line. The second line is going heretical, at which point you start gleefully following the ways of the Chaos Gods, and at that point you start killing, corrupting, betraying, and just miscellaneously harming people well beyond what would be normally expected of your social position. And at that point, you may wonder, is there a normal option? Are these my only two options? And I'm glad you asked, or didn't ask, as the case may be, because your third option is being like an iconoclast, is how the game describes it, which is you trying to be a normal and kind person in spite of all the structural incentives that tell you to fuck over literally everyone. And of course, this is of course the normal option, and it seems pretty nice until you realize that you are basically just doing philanthropy. Because even if you're doing like the iconoclastic options, one of the funny things that this game kind of peppers in there is that at the end of the day, you're still like compelling your subjects to sell their organs to pay off their debts and that kind of thing. Because you're a sovereign colonial viceroy, you can't exactly reform the system from the inside. At the end of the, and that's one thing I really, one of the things that Alcat is really good at is pulling all of these disparate threads of the Warhammer setting together. Because 40K is kind of interesting because of how very upfront it is about how monstrous everything you're doing is. Like, it's something that feels kind of refreshing because a lot of games like, I don't know, like Baldur's Gate 3 or Pathfinder or something like that, they try to kind of paint over the murder in an interesting way. And this game just kind of leans right into it. They try to give you like a good reason why you're doing much of this. In Warhammer 40K Rogue Trader, it's strictly because this is a bad world that you're in. And part of Alcat's way that they do this is that they're, you know, this game is very detailed. It's kind of delightfully acted a lot of the time. It's very expansive. It's also really comprehensive. I wasn't before playing this game, I wasn't really that interested or like invested in Warhammer 40K. But there's a kind of real love in this that like you can sense from the devs, and it also kind of rubs off on you as you play it because of how in-depth you can get into all of this. This was true of like Pathfinder, like the previous games that Alcat did, but in Warhammer 40K, their approach like really shines. You get to basically cover everything here. You meet everyone except the Tau and the orcs, and you even get to go to an interdimensional alien BDSM city, which is admittedly something that they also did in
Whoa.
Yeah.
Now we're talking.
Yeah. This also happened in Pathfinder Wrath of the Righteous, I need to be clear. You go to the Abyss in that game. And the glorious thing about it is that this is just, it's even more fun in this one because you're going to like, because it's contextualized within the setting of Warhammer 40K. And it's such a good time going there at the midpoint of the game that's the very funny thing is that when you go there, the game is also definitely peaked at that point, and the back half of it is less good than that. But yeah, the basic thing about this game is it just has sort of infectious enthusiasm about its subject matter. It really gets into your brain after a while. It kind of explains not just a lot of the concepts, but also why they're so interesting. What's the good part of Warhammer 40K that isn't just like, you know, miles and miles of 4chan posts about space marines? It's not the funny thing about it is it's not just uncritically repeating much of the in-universe fascist rhetoric like the most annoying fans of Warhammer 40K do. And once again, it's just kind of very nice playing a game that's not really interested in pretending that you're doing all of this for anything less than, you know, like greed, cruelty, and a love of violence. And so the game is just kind of well placed to sort of explore that impulse to like lean into an RPG and just kill like a million things. And yeah, it's as a result of being so detailed and huge, it's also like 100 hours long. By the time you're done with this game, you won't want another. Nobody does it like Alcat. These games are like a real acquired taste, but they really are kind of unique in that way. So yeah, that's my whole spiel about this game. Didn't meet your expectations, Ty.
I don't think you can beat the allegations this time.
Yeah. They are. Everybody loves the cruelty. It's the atrocity exhibition, you know? Gotta lead
Yeah,
through
who
with this
doesn't love
stuff.
a war crime, you know?
Yeah. I mean, all fantasy RPGs do it. This is just kind of it's just kind of leaning full ass into it.
Yeah, I mean it is 40K, so that tracks.
Yeah. But yeah. Gotta say, really good time. What's your second game?
Yeah, so my second game is another game that was made for a jam, so it's not like a fully completed game. But it is called Beat Volley, and it's by Radnix. And it was made for the Boss Rush Jam 2024, which I guess was just recently. And so basically it's a rhythm game. And it only has two levels right now, but it's like a boss rush rhythm game where you are this little like person, this little, yeah, I don't know, you don't really have like a name or anything. And you have, it kind of looks like you have like a bat or like a pole, but it kind of looks like one of those, if you've ever seen like Wipeout or any of those shows that have like the thing where people beat the shit out of each other with sticks to see who can knock each other down, but they have like the big pads on the ends. Yeah, so you have one of those basically, and there's this floating head that's like telling you to progress through this boss rush, and you don't really know why. And the head throws you a ball, and then you hit the ball in beat with the music to basically beat the shit out of each boss. And it's really fun. It's a very simple, short game, especially because there's only two levels to it right now. But like, I'm not a huge rhythm game person, and I really enjoyed it. It was the most like clear, easy way to follow a rhythm that I've played so far. And like, the bosses are cool looking, and the music fucks. And also, like, there's clearly going to be some kind of like deeper story to it, because the bosses are kind of alluding that like you might be being tricked by this head, and the head is telling them to like shut the fuck up. So yeah, it's an interesting little thing, and it's very good and fun, especially like, if you're not a huge rhythm game person. I think it's definitely worth checking out, and I'm excited to see if it becomes more bigger, because it's definitely really fun and cool.
Yeah. So let's just find a game that has an incredible hook, you know? Especially when it's a jam game. This is kind of the experience that I had with Terra Nil, where I played the original jam version and was like, God, this is the sickest thing ever.
Yeah, like sometimes people just crank out some incredible shit for jams.
In Terra Nil's case, we eventually made a whole game out of it that also kicks ass. So here's hoping.
Yeah, that's the hope here for sure. But yeah, there's not a ton to it right now, so I don't. Yeah, they said they made it in literally a 7-day week. So, yeah, there's not a ton to it right now, but what's there really kicks ass. So definitely play it and, support it so that it gets to be a bigger, longer game.
Yeah. Great things take time, but sometimes most of a great thing can be turned around in 7 days.
But yeah, that's all I got this time. HB, where can the people find you?
The people? Well, if the people must know, then the people can find me at gm36.itch.io. That's where I put all of the tabletop games that I write. And they are all there for the low price of free. That's right, gm36.itch.io for all your RPG needs.
Hell yeah. And you can find me everywhere at Owoth Keeper. This show is, of course, Indie Mixtape, which you can find on Twitter at IndieMixtapePod. And we are part of the Moonshot Network, which you can find at Moonshot Pods, I believe. But yeah, check out all the other killer shows on the network, and don't forget to do all of the rating, reviewing, all that good stuff. And yeah, we'll see you next time for more indie games. Goodbye.
Goodbye.